walks in. Here's the pitch. Misses up and out of the strike zone, and that's ball four. So the potential tying run back at the plate for Marathon. Morgan Sorge, who had a single back in the third, steps in. There's a high pop-up third base side, but that will be out of play. Lands on the road beyond the fence on the third base side. Strike one. Hints with the pitch. There's a little roller, third base side, but it'll go foul, and that's strike two. No balls and two strikes on Morgan Sorge. Nora Hintz, the second pitcher tonight for Wausau, came in with one out in the bottom of the sixth. Adriana Bodner with the first five and a third. Here's the pitch. It's in the dirt, goes to the backstop, and that will be a wild pitch. Advancing to second on the play is Sophia Kahn. And the count goes to one and two. Ball and two strikes. And the pitch. There's a fly ball short left field. That could be trouble going out. It's Defner who makes a great backhanded grab in short left field. What a play by Taylor Defner. Went down the line, had the backhander, took a base hit away. Huge play. That would have put the tying run on base for Marathon. Holding that second is Kahn, but a great jump and then a terrific grab with the backhand by Taylor Defner. Reagan Martin now steps in for Marathon. Hints with the pitch. Followed straight back for strike one. So Nora Hintz, now the pitcher of record. She had a chance for the save in the seventh, but now chance to earn the W. Here's the pitch. Misses outside for a ball. Ball and a strike. 7-5, Wausau with the lead, bottom of the eighth inning. And the pitch. Low and outside. And the count goes to 2-1. Two balls and one strike. Hints with the fire. Line drive. Oh, and a snag and a double play to end it. What a play by Defner again. That ball was crushed by Reagan Martin, but going to her left and snagging it out of the air was Defner. She could have taken it herself, but flipped it to Baylen Holstrom for the double play to wrap it up. Back to back. Terrific defensive plays by the Wausau shortstop, Taylor Defner, to finish off this victory for Post 10, 7-5 over Marathon. We'll come back and recap this one coming up next. This is American Legion softball on 98.9 WXCO.
Transform your home with the finest craftsmanship and custom cabinetry for your kitchen, bathroom, or closet. At Featherstone Cabinetry and Design, we bring your vision to life. From concept to completion, with expert design and professional installation. Choose Featherstone Cabinetry and Design for all your home upgrade needs. Proudly serving you from our locations in Rothschild and Minocqua. Check them out at www.featherstonecabinetry.com.
Hi, Jamie Schley here, agent with American Family Insurance. Do you know what it takes to make homeownership dreams a reality? American Family Insurance employees and agency owners and their local communities too. That's why I'm proud to support American Family's work with Habitat for Humanity. Just another reason why life's better when you're under our roof.
Contact Jamie Schley, agent at Jamie Schley Agency, LLC at 715-359-2400 today.
American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah. at Chad Holmes back again from Marathon, where we saw a very entertaining, a very interesting night. Went through a couple of rain delays and then an extra inning game as Wausau Post 10 defeats Marathon by a score of 7-5. It was a game that Wausau led pretty much throughout, but Marathon was able to tie it up in the bottom of the seventh inning with two outs, and then Wausau scored twice in the top of the eighth. And then a couple of terrific defensive plays by shortstop Taylor Defner in the bottom of the eighth. Was able to stifle, take away an opportunity for Marathon to rally again. Good night for Defner. She had three base hits, three singles, a couple of runs scored in an RBI. Carly Clues with three more hits as well for Wausau. Good pitching performances both by Bodner and Nora Hintz here for Wausau as well. And just generally a very solid effort, and solid effort for both teams as well. Marathon got a two-run home run by Danica Staus in this game. Allison Pajaski battled through eight innings in the circle as well for Marathon. In the end, it's Wausau 7 and Marathon 5 in eight innings. Again, I am heading off on vacation starting tomorrow through next week, so we will not have a broadcast next week, but we'll have two when I get back. We'll be back on Tuesday, July 15th for our next Post 10 softball game at home against Marshfield, and then we'll be back on Wednesday, July 16th when Post 10 travels to Merrill to wrap up the regular season. So we'll have those two broadcasts coming up in 2 weeks' time. But last night we had Wausau over Wittenberg-Burnhamwood 12-2. And here tonight it's Wausau over Marathon 7-5 in eight innings. Thanks to our sponsors. Again, without whose help, we could not bring you American Legion softball here on 98.9 WXCO. And thanks to you for joining us. I'm Chad Holmes from Marathon, where Wausau defeats Marathon 7-5. This has been Post 10 Softball on 98.9 WXCO.
This has been Wausau Post 10 American Legion Softball on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Wausau Post 10 Softball has been brought to you by American Family Insurance, Jamie Schley Agency, Featherstone Cabinetry, Price Less Building Center, Edward Jones Investments, Peter Gunn Agent. Thanks for joining us for Wausau Post 10 American Legion Softball on Central Wisconsin's radio voice for play-by-play, 98.9 WXCO.
This was the peace deal between Iran to stop, to go along with a ceasefire, and maybe with China to not invade Taiwan. Don't know, and I'm not saying that I know one way or another. If that's the case, maybe he is Mr. Art of the Deal. But I got to tell you, everything that we've seen thus far from this guy, it's been art of the bad deal. We've gotten the short end of the stick virtually every time he's touched something. He's like the reverse Midas. He's got a lot of gold toilets laying around, but ultimately they're full of, and I'm not president, I can't swear on the air, but they're full of you know what. I fear this is more you know what. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Are you in favor of what Mr. I Want a Nobel Peace Prize has done? And will this get him the prize? Because after all, Obama's got one. And, gotta show up Obama. Want to hear your thoughts. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, I look at what happened on Tuesday, and you know, Trump, you know, dropping the F-bomb. Because look, I think he sees that Nobel Prize slipping away, and Obama's still got one. But one of the weird things that you know crossed my field of vision as I was reading through the Truth Socials and all of the comments is at one point, you know, Trump truthed out that Israel is not going to attack Iran. All planes will turn around and head home. And while doing and this is the part that got me, a friendly plane wave to Iran. I don't know what that means. I'm here to share some thoughts on all of this craziness and maybe share some thoughts on if this is a good idea or bad idea. I've asked my good friend Rich Ojeda to come share some thoughts. Rich is a congressional candidate in North Carolina's 9th Congressional District. Also host of Ojeda Live, a nightly hit at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Facebook and YouTube, where you can ask him questions about his candidacy. Rich, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, no problem, Rick. I always enjoy it.
So let's start with the friendly the plane wave. Am I missing something? Iran and Israel, they're waving at each other to where it sounds like they're friendly. Am I missing something?
What he's basically talking about is basically going right on the edge there so that they get to see you. You know, just basically letting each other know that you're there. This is absolutely unacceptable. I woke up this morning to bombing in Qatar. And luckily, I think they shot down 13 of the 14 rockets that were coming towards Qatar, and one fell into the ocean. But what about all the other places? You know, what happens if Iran decides to go at the same time and shoot rockets towards the 50-plus bases that are around in the Middle East? You know, we don't have gold. We don't have the golden domes over those. So, this could absolutely end up absolutely being catastrophic.
Well, the argument would be, Richard, as I understand, and look, I'm not a military person, but the argument would be if they did one of those things, wouldn't that be the bright red line that a country right now that wants no part of this, and the polling is very clear, the majority of Americans want no part of this. But if you go and you bomb a military base and American soldiers die, I can see that turning around rather quickly. So I think Iran should probably think that through.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, they were attacked. And look, you know, I'm not taking no sides here. It's not going to end well.
Yeah.
It's not going to end well. I worry about, you know, people being hit. Who knows what's going to happen? I don't know. I really wish that, you know, we could get away from another endless war. You know, right now, you know, we could potentially see young men and women all across this country having to join up and fight. And, you know, just, you know, while they're actively attacking our Veterans Administration.
That's the part that gets me. They're talking about cutting 80 to 90,000 workers at the VA while maybe ramping up another long misadventure. And this is kind of the frustrating part of this, because I'm listening. I spent, you know, the last day and a half listening to right wing voices, the Hannitys and that crowd. And they're all in. They're cheerleading. They're pushing. The drums of war are beating loud over there, even though I still think the majority of Americans, and the polling bears this out, don't want any part of this. They're ramping this up.
I will tell you, you know, what worries me is if we get committed to yet another war, then what's to stop Russia from invading, you know, Europe. They already have troops on the borders of Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. I mean, you know, what's to stop that? What's to stop China from going into Taiwan? What's to stop North Korea from finally launching on South Korea? I mean, literally, this is what could happen. And, you know, this is what worries me. You know, I just don't see a good end to this.
Yeah. No, you bring up China, and, you know, a minute ago, I just talked about the fact that Trump, in a Truth Social post, said that China can now continue to purchase oil from Iran. Hopefully, they will purchase plenty of U.S. From the U.S. also. It was my great honor to make this happen. Isn't he one of the three presidents who put sanctions on Iran so that China couldn't buy that oil? And how did that happen in this whole scenario, and why, I guess?
I have no clue whatsoever. You know, I'm just like everybody else, just looking at this and like thinking, are we really here? You know, I mean, my goodness gracious, every day it's something else.
It's more chaos. And look, you know, first it was the greatest mission ever performed, and everything's completely obliterated, destroyed, like nothing else has ever been destroyed. And then our intelligence says, no, we really didn't get it.
Yeah, but it's not. Yeah, but it's not.
And this is where I have a real problem with Donald Trump and his governing style. Chaos is not a good style, and you know, being wrong all the time doesn't seem to be, you know, something I'm thrilled with.
Well, I mean, every day more and more people are waking up. Every day more and more people are saying we're done. You know, I will tell you, as a congressional candidate, I'm finding people coming up to me telling me that, you know, Republicans and independents, that they're done, you know. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I think a lot of people are waking up. His polling numbers are already, you know, in the gutter. So, I mean, how much longer until somebody finally decides to, you know, impeach? And I believe that Republicans are starting to, you know, I mean, Marge the Trainwreck Green's been speaking out against Donald Trump's actions all day. I mean, there's a weird
Yeah, but sight. You know, I look at her, and that's, I don't think that's so much anti-war as it is anti-Israel. I think that's yes. Anti-Semitism at on display there fully. If this were yes. Anybody else, I think she would be, you know, you go, Donald.
Yes, you're right. But the thing is that she is actually speaking out against Donald Trump. I mean, who would have ever thought that we would ever see something like that come from Marge the Trainwreck Green? But here we are. Whether it's, you know, I mean, you're probably right. It's probably at most has everything to do with Israel. But, you know, once again, we're still here.
But, you know, I look at this, and again, I come back to just the style of this administration, which is everything is the best ever. It was a complete success. And if Trump does it, if it works out well, it's Trump doing. Everything bad, Biden. And I listened to some right-wing blather today, as I said, and yesterday. And it's interesting how everything that's gone wrong, everything that's caused this, all Biden's fault. And, you know, they're ginning up that we got to go clean up Biden's mess. And, you know, if this wouldn't have happened, if we wouldn't have let people come into the country. I mean, it's really this weird, convoluted anger, hate message pointed in a direction of, hey, let's go blow stuff up and make the military industrial complex a whole boatload of money.
Well, that's exactly what is going to happen. And make no mistake about it, the military-industrial complex will be more than happy for us to get committed to another 20-year slugfest. But, you know, that's where we are. It's hard to even think that this is where we are.
Now, you brought up, you know, Russia a second ago, and former President Medvedev, you know, the day before yesterday said, hey, you know, Iran might not have nuclear weapons yet, but there may be countries out there who are going to go, hey, let's help them hurry up and accelerate this program because we haven't destroyed it. There's no confirmation that's been destroyed. In fact, all we've said is maybe hampered it by a couple of months. Do you see foreign these adversaries maybe helping them move in that direction? Because the one thing that I think we've learned, and I think other countries have learned, is we generally don't do this stuff to countries that have nuclear weapons.
What does Vladimir Putin have on Donald Trump? You know, I mean, you know, Trump will never say anything negative against Putin, but yet, like, here we go. It wouldn't surprise me if Putin had the ability to give a nuclear weapon to Iran, that they wouldn't. I mean, right now they're mad because the world is against them, and they're not allowed to just walk in and take, you know, Ukraine.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's once again, this is it.
Now, what are you hearing from folks who, from people who are, you know, wearing the uniform? Is there any sense of what's happening? Is there any discussions about what the expectations are? Have you heard any chatter in any way or another? Or is everyone like the rest of us just going, I don't believe anything the administration says. I don't know what to believe. And just hoping for the best.
Our military is going to be ready to deal with, you know, deployments. Our military will be ready. That's the way that it is. Now, whether or not soldiers agree wholeheartedly, that's one of those things. You know, we always say that, you know, if an order is illegal, immoral, or unlawful, you have a duty to refuse that. But yet, nobody's doing that. You know, I'm still waiting on general officers to stand up and speak out against whitewashing our military.
But do you think what he did is, do you think it's illegal what Trump did?
In terms of?
Of the bombing. Do you think going and dropping the bombs with the B-2 bombers, you know, these big giant bunker busters, do you think that was illegal?
I do not. First off, even J.D. Vance said that it was basically intuition. We thought that this is what we needed to do. But once again, you know, you should have intelligence that tells you it's without a doubt. Tulsi Gabbard flat out said 3 years, and Donald Trump said she's wrong. You know, so she's the person in charge of intelligence. She says it's 3 years. Donald Trump says no, let's go. You know, at the end of the day, they could have at least called everybody off of their break to at least let Congress know what's going on. But that didn't happen. They just acted on their own intuition.
So because what I'm trying to get from you is, because I've had a bunch of my lefty friends, oh, this was illegal and we should be impeaching him for this. And I'm like, I don't quite know, because I don't want to handcuff future presidents and decisions that really are of national security, because this guy has blundered so badly.
Look, if they had evidence to show that Iran was hours away from it, not a problem. It's not a problem. If you have a president can make us. We've woke up many times finding out that last night our military did a strike someplace.
Right.
You know, but once again, you know, if you're going to commit us to war, that is something that, you know, needs to go through Congress.
Because
this right here, if it was intuition without evidence, it was wrong.
So again, I come back to this. You know, you're using the word intuition. I'm using the someone I think sold him on the idea that, hey, this could be your peace prize, because evidently the Nobel Peace Prize seems to be front and foremost on his mind. But here, the weird part is I don't know how dropping bombs on people gets you the peace prize.
Exactly, it doesn't. I just think that they know that Donald Trump is fixated on him actually, I guess, obtaining one, and maybe, I don't know, sad.
Yeah, no, but the reason I wanted you to come out and talk to us, because you're in North Carolina's 9th Congressional District. There are a lot of military people in that district, and I know you're out, you know, shaking hands, kissing babies, doing all that stuff. I was kind of curious what you're hearing from folks in this moment, because, look, we hear the national polls, we do that, but I was hoping that maybe in your travels, you'd come across some folks going, yeah, one way or another. Thoughts?
No, you know, I mean, like I said, I go to a lot of functions, but in the last, you know, couple of days, you know, the people that I'm around, you know, we're all just looking at this as a potential another 20-year slugfest that, you know, sends a couple million more back here with injuries and post-traumatic stress disorder. And then I think about their wants to cut the VA. You know, you're literally going to commit us to more war while you're killing our health care. I mean, you know, what a slap in the face. You know, and I'll tell you this too. I mean, and I think this is something, you know, I think that if Donald Trump's going to do this, maybe Barron should go join the military.
I said that yesterday.
And let's not go as a JAG officer, infantry, or combat engineers. Let's do that. And you know what? Every single person in Congress that is supporting this, if they have fighting-age children, then they should be made to join the military too. We should draft those people because, once again, if their mother and father or if their mother or their father is so focused on absolutely crushing, you know, other places with our troops, then maybe their kids should be the one to carry a lot of that burden too.
No, I'm right there with you. I've said that about every time we've gotten into any of these things in my lifetime. The people who voted for it, the people who wanted their kids to the front of the line, maybe mine get to stay home and live another day. But, you know, I've gotten a lot of pushback from folks on the right saying, you know, this was necessary. We had to do this. Is there a justification for this now? Because there's part of me that goes, we shouldn't be involved in this at all. This seems to me like Israel's issue. Let them deal with it. If you want to give them arms, you want to give them bombs, you want to give them things to do. I don't know that it's our, the very same people who said we shouldn't be the world's policemen are now the ones saying we should be the world's policemen.
If it was President Biden, they would be screaming the exact opposite. That's just the way that it is.
Right.
You know, they're going to, you know, do that. But once again, I mean, is this what we want? And I don't think America does. I think the majority of people in this country, what you're looking at the polling shows, that they didn't, you know, they don't want this. You know, he's the one that said, if you vote for Kamala Harris within 6 months, we won't be at World War III.
Yeah.
Well, we're 6 months into his administration, and here we are, practically World War III. Every single thing that he says somebody else is going to do, he's really meaning what he's going to do. That's just the way that he is.
And you know what we're not talking about?
We're not talking about the Epstein list. We're not talking about the recounts in some of those places where Kamala Harris did not get one single vote. I grew up in southern West Virginia, which is the reddest district in the country. And I'm going to tell you right now, in the reddest area where I'm from, there's still people that voted for Kamala Harris. So, you know, they are definitely trying to make sure that everybody's looking in this direction so nobody's talking about that. And oh, by the way, you know, we're so busy trying to push all this money up to the billionaire class. You know, that's one of the reasons why they don't want these Epstein lists coming out, because that was the billionaire boys club. That's exactly what that was.
No, there's no question about it. And I don't know how you can make an argument, given the fact that you've got literally video of them hugging each other, how Trump wasn't involved in any of that. But for me, what we're not talking about is we're not talking about the stuff that most of my red hat friends voted for, which is lower egg prices, lower gas prices, a better standard of living. We were supposed to get, you know, all of these jobs. And yet the economy, not fixed on day one, not fixed on 2, 3, 4, 10, 100. We're nowhere near that. This to me is another one of these distraction. It's more of the chaos to get us away from focusing on what's really important.
When Iran shuts down that corridor, that 20% of the Earth's oil flows through, when they cut that off and all of a sudden gas goes from 285 to 585, I'm telling you, that's exactly what can happen.
Yeah.
That is exactly what can happen.
Well, I also think part of the reason, and to what I asked you at the beginning, you know, why would Trump allow China to buy oil from Iran? I think that's part of the deal. I think again, Mr. Art of the Deal got the short end of the deal. And look, you know, everyone was complaining about, you know, Biden gave Iran their money back. I think Trump has done this in spades by opening up that oil to China.
I think he knew that it was going to happen anyway, so he wanted to try to act like he had something to do with it. Because I mean, you know, everything the guy says, it's buffoon.
Last question I've got for you. You know, obviously the coming days, uncertainty abound. In fact, by the time this airs, everything will probably have already changed because that's how Trump operates. But what are you looking for? What are you paying attention to? Because none of us want this to escalate. What are you looking for to see if we're heading in the wrong direction?
I'm looking at China. I'm looking at Russia. You know, I mean, Russia has troops right now on the borders of the Baltic states, right across the water from Finland. You know, they have built up troops in those areas. And that right there tells me when they build up troops in those areas, it's only a matter of time before they decide to cross those borders. So that right there absolutely could be horrific. And then at the same time is if we're committed and we are committed to fighting this war with Iran, there is nothing that will stop China from going into Taiwan. There is nothing, you know, that's it. Now, the only thing that I can say is I honestly don't think that North Korea will ever launch anything on South Korea because South Korea will destroy North Korea. And they know it.
Well, going to be an interesting several days, tense days. And I hope you'll come back and keep us up to date on what's going on and share your thoughts. Rich, I appreciate it.
Hey, anytime. I always enjoy being on your show, Rick.
Our good friend Rich Ojeda. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Tell me what you think. Are you concerned? Are you worried? Or is this, hey, it's just how it's done. And, oh, by the way, check out Rich Ojeda's website, Ojeda for North Carolina, for NC.com. We'll get links out on social media. Gonna take a quick break. Right back.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO. As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy for tonight, maybe a stray storm, a low in the low 60s. For tomorrow, mostly sunny, hot and humid, highs into the mid-80s. Rain chances return for the 4th of July and the upcoming weekend. High temperatures stay in the 80s through the holiday weekend. It's 69 degrees right now.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
This is what I love, Madison. There's so many weird things. Bennett's Meadowood Country Club, which is a bar and not a country club, they have an event called Smut and Eggs. You show up for eggs and you watch a porn film while you eat breakfast. I have trouble watching a PG-13 movie when I eat breakfast. It's more of a dinner thing, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe a nice group orgy and some pasta.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, pressure mounting on the big, beautiful nightmare bill. Well, evidently, on Tuesday, Trump said Congress shouldn't leave town until the Republicans send him the one big beautiful nightmare. And look, it's amazing to me that they get away with this. You've got the big holiday coming up, but Speaker Johnson and Senate Majority Leader John Thune will probably cancel part of the 4th of July recess so they can get this nightmare done. Now, one of the stories that I've heard is that Thune has already said that the Senate's not going to leave for the fourth break. I don't know. We'll see. Chip Roy and a couple of the House members, they're freaking out. Because evidently this time Chip Roy is really serious that he might not vote for the bill. If it isn't something that, you know, he thinks is okay. He says, I can vote no as many times as it takes and for as long as it takes to do something actually big and beautiful. And look, he's talking big. We'll see. Now him, Andy Harris, and Eric Burleson, they're all kind of in that little, you know, they've got some power. Because if the three of them vote against it, it doesn't go anywhere. So my question is, what are they angling for? You know, what are they going to try and put into their pocket? Speaking of Tom, of the Senate, Tom Tillis, North Carolina, he's interesting because he's saying, look, he's telling, you know, Republicans in a closed door meeting on Tuesday that this could prompt a major electoral loss similar to what happened after Obamacare, which again blows my mind. And he might be right. This is not a popular bill. When you're talking about the massive cuts that are in this, the massive handouts to the very wealthy, this is redistribution of wealth from working people upward on steroids. But, you know, Mitch McConnell, always to the rescue. He said, I know a lot of us are hearing from people back home about Medicaid. Yeah, but they'll get over it. And look, is he right? I mean, we have seen a working class that has tolerated, you know, really bad policy out of Republican-led government for a very long time. Is he right? That, yeah, there'll be some squawking. There'll be some people who are going to get upset about it. But ultimately, the hatred, the anger towards the others, if we just trot out another bathroom kind of bill, that's what they'll focus on. And understand, they're talking about almost $1 billion in cuts to Medicaid, which we already know that kind of taking out of that program could cost thousands of people their lives. And as we talked about the other day, you know, yeah, who cares? They're poor people, right? I mean, ultimately, that's what they're saying. Yeah, most of the people get over because we're just killing off poor people. And what you see is, you know, estimates right now are if Republicans get their way, some 16 million people nationwide could lose care, access to health care. And that means, you know, in my view, penny wise, pound foolish. Because look, without Medicaid, people are much less likely to go seek preventative care when they need it, regular treatments when they need it, especially for chronic illnesses like diabetes, which ultimately, you know, leads to much worse outcomes, more severe health problems, more emergency room visits, preventable deaths, all of this stuff. But, you know, ideologically, kill off the social safety net. We also know that rural hospitals are screwed. The last numbers I saw, 330 rural hospitals across the country will close if this happens, because you're going to have an enormous amount of uncompensated care, especially in the emergency rooms, because people without health insurance generally don't have family doctors or doctors that they go to. And what happens? Well, they go to the ER for everything. And you've got rural hospitals reliant on Medicaid funding because they got a lot of low-income folks in those areas. Who's going to pick that up? You know, even I look at myself, I've got really good health insurance. What happens if the local hospital closes? What good is it? And oh, by the way, I pay a ton for it, and it's going to get a lot more expensive. All so we can give rich people more tax cuts. And as I said, this is going to reduce access for care for everyone, not just poor people. And this is where radical self-interest has to play into this. Like I said, I've got really good health insurance. If there's no doctor, if there's no hospital, if there's nowhere to take that card and go, look what I've got, what good is it doing me? Because you've destroyed the infrastructure. Now understand, you know, there is going to be an economic ripple effect, and not in a good way. Medicaid dollars go into local economies. They support local healthcare facilities. They support that industry. If you reduce federal funding, if you take money out of Medicaid, you're going to have job loss, you're going to have decreased economic activity, and you're going to have lower state tax revenues. We know what's going to happen. Local businesses are going to suffer. Families are going to suffer. It's all bad. Other than when you go, well, you know, we kicked those poor people while they were down. And understand, this is going to cost us a lot. This is going to cost us a lot long term. Because, again, what we know is when people lose coverage, when they delay care, what we know is conditions get worse. Things get a lot more expensive. It's like if you got a small hole in your roof and you don't bother to patch it for a month, 2, 6, a year, 10 years, what happens? Your condition gets worse. Water gets in, you got water damage, you got all kinds of bad. Same scenario. If we're not funding this, it doesn't mean people are going to stop getting sick. It doesn't mean people are going to stop going to the hospital. It just means we're going to shift the burden, well, to other working class folks. And this is part of the Republican plan, because what you're able to do is you're able to get people, especially in the working class, to look at each other and go, you're the reason things are bad. You know, the old Jay Gould, I can pay half the working class to murder the other half. We're just doing it now without Medicaid. I go back to, the amount of medical debt we have in this country. It's incredible. What was it? 60% of all bankruptcies are due to medical expenses. As I've said before, I'm a huge proponent of Medicare for all. I'm a huge proponent of a single payer health insurance system. Not so fond of a universal government run system. But my military friends, they love the VA, which is absolute universal health care. Government run, government owned, government operated, government funded. And they're trying to destroy that. All while saying, hey, look, it's a bureaucracy. Bureaucracy's bad. Long term, the implications of loss of coverage are catastrophic. Like I said, hospitals are going to be under strain. The ripple effect of job loss, all of that, delayed care, all of that. But in the end of it, what we know is by cutting Medicaid, by cutting social safety net programs, it kicks the most vulnerable. Now, remember, we're that Christian nation. Remember, you know, we're good God-fearing folk. You know, everyone loves the Jesus, except when he says, you know, take care of the poor, feed the hungry, clothe the naked, house the homeless, care for the infirm, visit the elderly. You know, if that's the kind of Christian nation they were talking about, you might get me back. But the reality is the people who are pushing this big, beautiful nightmare, none of that morality is in this bill. None of it. And the Chip Roys of the world and all of them can grandstand and say, this time, it'll be different. Yeah. Until they fatten his wallet. Until they ensure that he's taken care of at the expense of the rest of us. Now, it's interesting. My daughter, my youngest, just got back from Europe. And over there, they have universal health care. And she wants to be a doctor. So on the ride home, you know, one of the conversations that we had is, you know, she said, you know, I'd really love to go to Oxford. I'd love to, you know, they all this great stuff. It's beautiful. It's all this. She goes, but their doctors don't get paid an awful lot. Because she's got in her head, hey, you know, here in the U.S., oh, I might make $1 million as a doctor. And I said, well, maybe, but here you're going to have $1 million worth of student loan debt by the time you finish medical school. And you're going to spend a lot of time billing insurance. And there's going to be a lot of all kinds of stuff to where, you know, there, because I actually know a couple people who are doctors there, they get to practice medicine. They get to do the thing that they wanted to do. And we started talking about the differences in systems and you know, worse, better. And look, you know, in Europe, it's not perfect. You know, they've got governments who try, much like we have here, to starve their healthcare system so that they can privatize and emulate us, the most costly system on the planet that delivers not the greatest results. We like to think that we've got the best system in the world. Not so much. If you've got the money, sure. But if you're poor, if you're in the working class, if you're fortunate like I am to have union negotiated benefits, yeah, we've got a pretty good system. But if you're anyone else in the working class, well, better luck next time. Because that's basically what Mitch McConnell is saying. Yeah, we'll cut $880 billion in savings, of course. From the Medicaid system over the next 10 years. And, yeah, you know, they won't mind. So I'm curious, do you mind? Is it something that you think is kind of important to have that social safety net, even if you've never used it? I kind of think it is. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Got any stories of you know, bad things happening, and fortunately that net was there to hold you up? Or, you know, are you one of the, what, 60% of the bankruptcies because of medical debt? I want to hear it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1893. That was the day that the Haymarket Martyrs Monument was dedicated at what is now the Forest Home Cemetery, just west of Chicago. The Haymarket Martyrs were eight men convicted of throwing a bomb at a workers' rally in Chicago during the 1886 fight for the eight-hour day. The men were sentenced, although the prosecution had no evidence specifically tying these eight men to the bomb. Some of them were not even present at the time of the explosion. Four of the men were hung, one died in prison, and three were still incarcerated at the time of the monument's dedication. Lucy Parsons, the widow of martyr Albert Parsons, led the statue effort with the support of the Pioneer Aid and Support Association. The monument was designed by sculptor Albert Wienert. It includes two bronze figures, a woman depicting justice holding a fallen worker. At the base of the statue are inscribed the last words of one of the martyrs, August Spies. The day will come when our silence will be more powerful than the voice you are throttling today. The dedication of the monument was timed to coincide with the World's Columbian Exposition taking place in Chicago. Thousands of workers marched or took a train to the outskirts of the city to attend the ceremony. Today, the monument stands as one of the most sacred sites of labor. Many other labor and social justice activists are buried or have monuments near the statue. Today, the Illinois Labor History Society maintains the monument. Each year, visitors from around the world come to the cemetery to pay homage to the workers who gave their lives for the cause of labor. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Sad day in government affairs. Evidently, Big Balls has left government service. Edward Corstein. You may remember the name. He was one of the first technologists, I guess is what they're calling him. Elon Musk's Doge ferret. Evidently, he got the gig working for the federal government. I'm thinking maybe too hard. I'm thinking maybe they expect you to do actual work. And it's work, which is, you know, interesting. Now, Wired has reported that he has left. I'm not 100% sure why. I can only assume it's work. You know, gotta do your job. Yeah. You know, like all of the federal workforce who show up and do our work, kind of makes you think. Now, interestingly enough, a federal judge has blocked Trump's elimination of bargaining rights for federal workers. A federal judge in San Francisco put the stop, at least for now, because I'm waiting for it to get to the Supreme Court. The Trump administration wants to strip union rights from hundreds of thousands of federal workers. But Judge James Donato sided with the union, the American Federation of Employees, and others of government employees, saying that Trump's executive order was likely illegal. This order would have let agencies change working conditions, fire people at will, and of course, silence union voices without going through any due process. And remember, this administration despises due process. Now, for working people, you could go, this is a pretty good win. This is a judge going, hey, this is contracts matter, labor contracts matter, because look, without unions, ask any worker without a contract. They can be fired for any reason or no reason as long as it doesn't violate a federal law on age discrimination or gender or any of that stuff. But just, you know, there's the door. No reason. Not illegal. Without unions, you have employers who can steamroll workers, cut pay whenever they want, increase workloads whenever they want, and of course, fire without cause or due process. Now, the judge's order claimed it was about the executive order claimed it was about national security. Judge didn't buy it. It would have impacted workers who have nothing to do with national security. This decision does block about 20 other agencies, including Veterans Affairs, the Treasury Department, the Department of Labor, stops them from carrying out the order while this lawsuit moves forward. And as I said, this could end up before the Supreme Court. And understand, this is kind of a reminder that working people do need a strong voice. We need much stronger unions. We need workers to get much fairer treatment, no matter what King Donald and his ilk want. Now, look, there are a couple of key ramifications here. You've got a judge who says, look, we need to preserve union rights for federal workers. It's protecting collective bargaining rights for hundreds of thousands of them. I would argue also a check on executive overreach. This is another example of Trump just out of whole cloth deciding, you know what, those laws that we've got, nah, we don't need Congress. I can unilaterally act with the stroke of a pen. Also, cuts down on kind of stalling the anti-union stuff for now. I think once it gets to the Supreme Court, though, I think it goes the other way. But also, look, it shows that unions have some spine. They're out there fighting, and I'm good, about time. And look, for the rest of us, people who aren't in government unions, you're next. If this happens, it's going to happen to you next. Also, the Department of Labor. Speaking of the Department of Labor, they've canceled over $500 million in grants to international labor rights groups fighting child labor law violations, forced labor, human trafficking. They've gutted those fundings in about 40 countries. And what's interesting, the people who are advocating for this cut, they're calling it "We're Stopping America Last" programs. And I'm going, I don't get that. If you're allowing low road countries to continue to exploit, that harms this country. If you don't stop places like Bangladesh from having sweatshop labor, you're never going to compete in the garment sector. If you can't stop places like China from using forced labor like the Uyghurs, you're never going to have a prosperous working class. But understand, you've got a movement in this country of the well-to-do who, that's what they want. They want desperate, poverty-stricken workers. And right now, our Supreme Court has agreed to hear a case on forced labor in immigration detention centers. So as ICE is out there running around scooping people up, what do you think they're doing with them? Evidently, they're putting them, they want to put them into privately run immigration detention centers to use that cheap labor. It's really, when you stop and think about it, pretty brilliant. We're not going to let those workers go into the country and work in restaurants or on construction sites or any of that stuff, or in hotels or any of that. No, we're going to gather them all up, put them into basically concentration camps and work them for cheap labor. And you'll never guess who has a stake in one of the largest, most prominent ICE contractors. Yeah, Stephen Miller. Evidently has a substantial amount of stock in this company called Palantir. They are one of the biggest contractors. And I got to wonder, is corporate America going to have some ties in there? Because wherever there's cheap, exploitable labor, you've got American CEOs just looking for a fix. Are we surprised by any of this? The answer, no. Also, on Tuesday, you had the Machinist Union in Boston out talking about how important local shipbuilding is in the country. And they were at the Boston Ship Repair Yard, a facility represented by the Machinist Union and their members there in downtown Boston. They were there to call attention to the need to reinvigorate our domestic shipbuilding capacity and repair industry. Because guess what? We haven't done real well. And in recent years, global shipping companies have overwhelmingly chosen to use cheap labor, cheap material, and places like China to source their vessels. As a result, what we've seen is American shipbuilding dramatically, dramatically decline. And look, China said they were going to do it. this it was a strategic plan of theirs. It was part of their China 2025 plan, and they've executed it masterfully. What have we done? Not a lot. Now understand, what can this union do? Well, they can call attention to this problem and get people like a congressional delegation to actually do something. Because understand, we need to bring shipbuilding back here to our shores. And this should be a national priority. And understand, for me, it's not just about creating good, solid union wage jobs. That's a big part of it. But again, as a high school student, learning about the arsenal of democracy, learning about how during World War II we were able to ramp up production. You know, so when our grandparents went off to fight and die in the European theater, they had stuff they needed because we needed bombs and planes. If we're right now on the verge of maybe World War III, not saying we are, but if you're China or Russia, are you not looking to see if we get involved in another misadventure? And do we have the capacity to ramp up quickly? For me, it's about protecting the country. It's about making sure we're not left vulnerable in a world where global tensions are absolutely rising. Understand, American shipyards once employed thousands of skilled workers. These were good, solid, union-paying jobs. Welders, electricians, machinists. We often hear about the golden era, the mythical era at this point, the unicorn era at this point, of a single income, a single breadwinner being able to support a family. And kids being able to go to college, families able to take vacation, people able to retire with dignity on one income. Those were the kind of jobs that did it. And over the years, what have we seen? We've allowed those jobs to be outsourced. We've allowed those industries to be dismantled. We've left ourselves with a hollowed out industrial base. And why? So we can make our billionaire class just a little richer. So for me, as we've talked with my friend Scott Paul about numerous times, we need to be rebuilding our shipbuilding capacity. And as I said, you know, it would mean not only revitalizing our economy, especially in the coastal and industrial towns that have been so badly decimated, but it would bring back that American pride, slap an American flag on that, big ones if you want, and it would help American labor, help American workers, help you and me. And again, back to the national security position. It's dangerous for us to have to depend on foreign nations to build or repair our ships. Think about this, and I've said this a number of times. If we ever did get into a shooting war with China, do you think that they're going to send us what we need? Do you think we're going to go, hey, we'd really like some of those magnets you guys make that we used to make here? We'd really like some of those. Can you send us some so we can bomb you with it? Understand, if conflict breaks out, we can't afford to be at the mercy of anyone else. And I'm a hawk on this issue. So we need to have domestic industry. We need to have domestic manufacturing. We need to build our stuff. Because understand, during both world wars, the shipyards, that was the backbone of the war effort. Ask yourself, if we face the same kind of crisis today without a manufacturing base, what does that look like? What does it look like if we don't have the ability to rely on that arsenal of democracy? Now, from the greedy, self-centered point of view, we just came out of a pandemic. If national security isn't your thing, how about putting food on the table and going, oh, by the way, I need to make sure my kids eat today. I need to make sure that, our supply chain isn't completely dominated by someone who hates us. Just a thought. I want to hear yours. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. What do you think? Is it a good idea to cut funding to go after child labor violations around the globe? Is it smart to not have a shipbuilding industry? Trump leading us in the right direction? Want to hear your thoughts. email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast, or if you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio.
WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Sean Diddy Combs remains in custody while he awaits his sentencing on prostitution charges. He has been acquitted of sex trafficking and racketeering. Combs lawyer Mark Aragon.
They saw through an overcharged, overzealous, kind of a crazy prosecution, and they did the right thing.
CBS's Jerika Duncan.
Sean Combs put his hands up to the sky. He had his hands sort of clasped as though he was praying, according to those who were inside the courtroom, and kneeled down. He was very emotional. There was cheering inside of the courtroom once this verdict was read.
Brian Koberger avoids the death penalty and will spend the rest of his life in prison without parole after pleading guilty in the murders of four University of Idaho students in 2022. CBS's Carter Evans.
We learned a lot more from the prosecution about the case, some things that we hadn't heard before.